I had my business called Park, which had a shop in Grafton Street, Dawson Street, Baggot Street, and I had two up in UCD. So I had five shops. Insomnia had six shops and another company called Bendini and Shaw, which was a sandwich making company, had five shops. So in a really, like, what happened was the three businesses became one and everything was rebranded as Insomnia. So we'd 17 shops and off we went.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Time's running out. Windows 10 support ends this October. That means no updates, no more security patches. That is a major risk for you and your business. But Nostra is helping you and your business upgrade. Book your free consultancy call. Simply click the link in the description below the podcast episode. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today. Bobby, welcome to the pod.
Delighted to be here.
One of the most famous faces and voices in Ireland.
Don't know about that, but we'll do our best.
Bobby, why did you start a business?
When did I?
Why? Why did you start a business?
I started a business because I felt I'd run out of road in the job that I was working in. I didn't start my first business till I was 39 years of age. I'd had a whole corporate career, done lots of different things. So the reason for me to find, was the reason that I started a business was that I basically felt I'd done all I could do working for somebody else. That was the reason. Not for the money, not for the fame, but because I was no longer stimulated getting up every day going into work.
I think that'll interest people because I think a lot of people assume, oh, you know, entrepreneurs, they start when I always knew.
I didn't sell sweets in the yard. I didn't do any of that stuff. I decided that, you know, it was, and I sort of reflected on the knowledge I had and I reckoned that I had enough experience under my belt to do what I wanted to do. So I just went for it then.
What did you want to do?
Well, I was very fortunate in that I worked in a company called Bewley's for Campbell Bewley Group, indeed, for 11 years. And I started in there in the contract catering side of the business. I worked in as a catering manager in UCC. I was the area manager. Then I moved to Bewley's, which back in my day had 50 shops. It had a shop in every town in Ireland. It had a bakery, it had a coffee company, a franchise company. It was a big, big company. Mm. And I became the managing director of that company. And Bewley's was famous for its coffee. So I had an insight into the coffee business that I built up over those years. And in tandem with that, the world of coffee was changing. And with my experience that I had in Bewley's, with what I saw that was happening with Starbucks, Seattle Coffee Company, I was looking at the world market And I could see the change was coming. And I decided that I was going to try and be the Irish version of whatever was going to emerge. And that's what I did. And I had my fourth child, like a baby of a couple of weeks old. I remortgaged my house. I took on a loan and I put the house on black. Yeah. And so
huge decision at that time of your life. What was driving you? You felt you'd reached the end of the road, but what was driving you?
Well, I had an idea and I had a kind of a loose vision. Your vision is never, spot on back in the early days, but I had a loose vision of what might work. Like, if you think about it, the business that I was used to was, 20,000 square foot premises, huge big cafe operations, no takeout business. So in my day, there was two types of coffee. There was black and white. There was no culture of walking down the street with a takeout cup. This was all coming. There was also no culture of takeout sandwiches or, it was in its infancy. So my grand plan was that if I could get a place in a high footfall area that needed a fraction of the footplate, i.e. the rent would be rent representative, and I could get a place with a low rent that 50% of the business was taken off the premises in a coffee-led with a nice range of patisseries, sandwiches, good soups, all simple, but all quality, and half it to be taken, half it to be taken out. That was my business model.
But I think that's beautiful in simplicity, but you were taking a big leap there because it sounds so obvious now, because we're sitting here, literally there's people walking by every 2 seconds with a coffee cup. It's so obvious. The coffee culture is so strong now. But even when you were explaining to me about Bewley's, I was vaguely reckoning and back in my head going, oh yeah, there did used to be loads of places knocking around. But you were thinking of a whole new model.
Yeah, yeah. I was one of the things which was great, like we were first there. So when you're first there in a market and people are learning about it, it's a great place to be because...
It is, but the first mouse gets the cheese, but the first mouse gets caught in the trap sometimes as well.
And everybody used to say to me, these guys, Starbucks are coming.
Right.
They're going to come and they're going to blow you away. They're going to wipe you out. And they came and they opened beside us in Ballsbridge, in Malahide, and in Blackrock. And our sales went down for 2 weeks. I thought it was over. And our sales went down for 2 weeks. And guess what? They brought more customers. And guess what? The sales came back and we survived.
And you probably upped your game. You probably got better.
We upped our game. And then they withdrew from the market. 2 years later, they closed down and pulled out. And I said, well, I survived that beating. But it just shows you that the perception of the big brand coming and the reality of its arrival were very different.
The execution is everything. Yeah. Talk to me then about your first, because I think when people picture you, they picture a very successful person, they picture kind of your sale of insomnia. But tell me about your first place. Where was it? How did you get it?
My first shop was in Grafton Street, underneath Lower Ashley. Business was called Perk. So Insomnia came about, so there was Insomnia started. I wasn't a founder of Insomnia. I had my business called Perk, which had a shop in Grafton Street, Dawson Street, Baggett Street, and I had two up in UCD. So I had five shops. Insomnia had six shops and another company called Bendini and Shaw, which was a sandwich making company, had five shops. So in a really, like, what happened was the three businesses became one and everything was rebranded as Insomnia. So we'd 17 shops and off we went. But getting back to your question, my first shop was called Perk. It was in the basement of Lower Ashley. The guys in Lower Ashley, it was a place that there was broken couches and it was an unused part of a premises in Grafton Street. And my big challenge was to get people down into the basement. And the first thing I did was I put up a sign. I did a deal with a guy across the road. And I put up a big banner right across the street that the council said that they were going to bring me to court over. But I got 3 weeks out of it. And that gave me a bit of recognition. I also opened, in October, and it was very, very quiet at the start. I thought I'd made a big mistake, but I stuck with it and I got dug into it. I drove the business with my personality. I was there night and day, and I managed to build trade on that basis. People came in, I knew all their names, I knew what they liked, what they didn't like, and I just built it up. And then when the Christmas retail surge came, we were there to meet it, and all of a sudden we weren't making big money, but we were going to survive.
When was this?
1998.
Okay, start of the good times.
Well, yeah, I think there's always been good times and bad times. It was a time. We were still coming out of recession at one level. So, you know, rents were reasonably cheap. The best five deals I ever did were my first five, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
Because not many people start on Grafton Street.
Yeah, well, we did a turnover-based deal, number one. So Laura Ashley, anything they got was going to be a bonus for them because it was a piece of their property that they weren't using. So they were quite happy to say, give us X percent of whatever you turn over. I said that. So that allowed me build a trade, and I had a pro rata rent, which meant it was a very, very successful location ultimately. It's now the Disney store.
Ah, I know exactly where it is now. Okay.
Yeah.
What a location, though. Yeah. I can never, is that the top or the bottom of Grafton Street?
Top.
Okay. Could never understand which way that is. So how did you go? Because you said something really interesting there. I was in and I knew everybody's name. You were MD of Bewley's. How do you go from being MD to making coffee? Did your ego suffer? Were you keen to do it?
I never had an ego. I still don't. I'm quite happy making coffee. I'm quite happy in the trenches. Always was, always will be. I'm not a guy who sits up in offices. I'm not a guy who does big corporate stuff. I am in the business, driving the business, and that's the way I've always operated.
I can actually tell when you're interviewing people because you get it. When you interview founders, you get it. You talk their language. It's very different than when you see a founder get interviewed by kind of a regular kind of journalist without disparaging them. They're just asked the generic questions, whereas you understand. You've been a founder. You are a founder. You understand their pains. So it's interesting to see.
But I'm also hugely interested in their story and my curiosity around business is, you know, insatiable. And that's why I do what I do in the broadcasting world. Is my primary motivation is to keep in touch with people and to talk to interesting people doing interesting things.
We're very similar, the same. Like sometimes I even don't know why I'm doing it. I just have this insatiable urge to talk to founders, to understand, to learn. Even if it's a business that I have no interest or background in, I'm even more interested. Even in the Mansion House, me and you were down there a few minutes ago. And just to see the behind the scenes of that, like, oh, they're setting up for service. Oh, they're doing an event. Like just to see behind, it's addictive.
Yeah, no, it's good.
So then bring me back to the first place, right? Because I think we need to go on the journey here of how we get to insomnia. Bring me back to the first place. You started off, you remortgaged the house, you got your first location. Step me through the kind of the first kind of 12 to 18 months here.
So we were open in Grafton Street, then we opened in Baggot Street, and it was real tightrope stuff in terms of having enough money to pay the builder to get actually open, and it was real seat of the pants stuff. Then we opened in Dawson Street, which actually was good because we were able to use our shop in Grafton Street to sort of do some of the production for Dawson Street. We also had a unit down in Liffey Trust, which is in Sheriff Street, where we made all our soups, our sandwiches, which was became a very, very busy unit because it was ultimately supplying a big number of shops. That was burnt down in 2002, and it was probably one of my darkest times in business. I woke up one morning and all the place that made all the soups and the prep for all our sandwiches was no longer there. So I had six shops that really depended on this unit. And all of a sudden, overnight, it was gone.
What happened?
It was basically an extract fan caught fire. There was over 1,000 people working down in the Liffey Trust, 30 businesses down there. And we were one of two businesses, or maybe three, that were insured. So we were insured, and we were insured against business interruption, thankfully. And I was able to open. Ultimately, I got through. I borrowed a kitchen up in Leopardstown Racecourses. Fitzers, my partners at the time, were able to give us a loan of a kitchen, and they very generously gave us this kitchen for 8 weeks, got us over the hump. And with the insurance money, we were able to open two more shops. So it actually turned out to be a good thing.
So when did you know the model was working? Because you kind of came into the market with a different type of model. Because I think that's it's visionary if it works out, but if you're wrong, you look ridiculous.
So
how did you know it was going to work?
For the first three shops, the best we were doing was breaking even. And I had the costs pared back to nothing. I had no management. I was the manager. I had a part-time accountant, and everybody else was in the shops. It was like, so there was, or down in the Liffey Trust, prepping food. So it was stripped right back, and we still weren't able to make money. Then when we went up to UCD, we got two units up there, and the volumes were absolutely massive. And I mean, they were beyond our wildest dreams.
You were in the college.
Yeah, we were in the Quinn Business School, and we were in the Conway Institute, and we were up there for over 10 years. And it was very, very good. We were also in a related side of the business as Insomnio grew. We had a bean-to-cup coffee machine that was, we partnered up with Spar, and that was a big part of the business. So the coffee and convenience stores, we had the Students Union building up there with four or five high output machines, again, for another 10 years. So UCD was very good to us in that sense.
How did you keep expanding if you really weren't making that much money? What gave you the confidence to go, no, not only is this going to work, I'm going to keep growing it?
Well, one of the things we needed to do was we needed to get to scale to make money. So every time we made money, we opened a new shop. So we just, any time money was made, it was invested in the next shop. That was the model.
You had that much belief in it working?
Oh yeah, it was working. It was working.
What was your goal though? What was your vision? Because that takes real guts to go, yeah, we're breaking even here, but we're going to open another one, another one, another one, another one. What was your goal? What was your gut feeling?
My original business plan had 25 shops in it. And we ended up in Insomnia. When I left in 2018, we had 600 convenience stores and 200 shops. Yeah. So it was well beyond my original projections of 25 shops.
But you'd taken the knowledge from Bewley's going, this is how big chain
can
run.
Well, only bits of it. Like, Bewley's was my experience in Bewley's around the coffee and maybe around property, around, you know, dealing with leases. I learned a lot of stuff like that there. But it was a very different business to what I'd come from.
What was your biggest mistake in the early years?
Not having enough capital. Underfunded. I never spent too much in shops, but I probably went in too tight on the basis of what something was going to cost. Well, I didn't have it. So I was underfunded, which meant it was very stressful in the early days. We were close to the wall on a few occasions. So that can be, it can spur you on as well, but it can be challenging.
And then how you briefly alluded to it earlier, you went from one business to two business to three business. How does that merger come about? Was that a buyout? Did you buy them out? Did you join venture? What happened?
I actually sold my business to Insomnia, believe it or not. And then I did a kind of a really weird thing. The money I got, I put it back into the business and became the CEO. So it was like I was a seller and a buyer almost on the same day, believe it or not.
How does that come about?
Well, it's just the way it came about.
There's more to that.
Well, they needed someone to run the business, and I was the person.
Okay.
So I said I'll run the business because I didn't really want to sell the business, but I knew that if I didn't collaborate, I'd never get scale. So to me, I was much better off with, say, 30% of something that was far bigger than 100% of what I had. And that was probably one of my smartest moves, believe it or not, to actually see that there was more value in owning 30% of something that could grow rather than 100% of something that was, who knows where it was going to go.
That's quite strategic. Like, I mean, you can see strategic decisions in your journey here. It shows, again, the lack of ego, but it's quite strategic to let go of something you've spent a lot of time and you've remortgaged your house on to then even take a bigger punt.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot's in, for me in business, you know, you start off with something, you grow it, you grow it, you grow it. There's only one payday. That was the way I looked at it. You build this, you build it, everything that you generate goes back into it. And then hopefully one day you get an exit.
Okay, so you were happy to play the long game here. Absolutely. You were like, I'll play the long game.
No, absolutely. And I was never in it for a short term. And all up, you know, I was there between Perk and Insomnia. I was there over 20 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you went, then you joined all the businesses together. Talk to me about that, because I'm sure that is difficult.
Well, it is, and you've got personalities and you've got different people from different businesses. But, you know, you've got to, again, see what the best, you know, the best name was Insomnia, without a doubt. It looked good. It looked good on a sign. It definitely was. So, again, I didn't have an ego around my name. I wanted the best name. So I'm happy if it's someone else's name, I'm okay with that.
I often say that to people. I was like, look, I'm not precious about this. When I ask for feedback, I'm like, I'm asking you to get genuine feedback. I don't care. I just want to win in the long term. And they're kind of taken aback, because most people will kind of give you nice feedback. Oh, I enjoy it or whatever. Whereas I'm like, no, I just want to win. I don't really care how we get there. I just want to get better. So you took the same approach. You went in clean slate.
Yeah. And we had a lot of good different production things that we were able to get synergies in. We went from each business having 5 sites to now we had 17 sites, and we were considered a business. We were there in terms of, at least in Dublin. Most of our, we'd one business in Galway, but the rest of the business was in Dublin.
So you went in full rebrand, let's go.
Yeah, and then we just grew it from there. And the arrangement that we came to with Spar, which was a couple of years later, that eventually became a big part of the business. So that was another strategic decision that worked well for Insomnia. One of our shareholders was involved with Spar and BWG, and he also had the vision. They were looking for a coffee solution, and we were happy to provide it. So everybody won there. And as I say, it became a very, very successful part of the business. The other thing we did was we partnered with people that had deeper pockets than us, again, in the early days. So we partnered with people like Eason's, Penny's, Meadows and Byrne, where we went in and took space in their units and created cafes within them. And that was another way of us being able to punch above our weight.
How did you spot that opportunity?
People came to us because they saw what we were doing. If you do a good job, like, you know, I often talk to people about selling your business. The way to sell your business is to do a good job. and to make people say, this is a great business, I'd like a piece of that. And we were doing a pretty good job on the high street, and most of those partnerships that we did with those, they all approached us.
Because it felt like insomnia was suddenly everywhere. I remember growing up with this, and I remember seeing insomnia start to grow and grow and grow, and suddenly it felt like you were just organically growing everywhere. So was it these strategic decisions to go, okay, we're going to pop up in partners in non-traditional places you don't expect to see in insomnia?
Well, that was one of our routes to market. So we had our own leases on the high street. We had concessions and partnerships like I just mentioned, and then we had Spar. Mm-hmm. So there were three revenue streams. And, you know, like every business, there were times when one of them was better than the other. There were times when, you know, one was tight and the other carried the other. And again, it's a fundamental for me. If you have a business, you need more than one revenue stream. So, and again, there's a perfect example of where it saved our bacon a couple of times. And, you know, the power of three streams made it a much stronger business.
I think that's a huge lesson. Yeah. Because you were reaching different types of customers. You were de-risking, you were adding leverage, you were building the brand, but in so many different ways. So I think there's a lot of lessons there for early stage founders going, okay, maybe your model is like this now, but could it also be here and here? I think that's, we were talking about it downstairs, like business is changing. The cities are changing. The towns are changing. Yeah. The suburbs are booming. You have to be willing to change. It strikes me so interestingly that after COVID, people are still surprised by change. I'm like, if you've learned nothing from COVID, you should learn that everything is possible.
Yeah.
In good and bad ways.
And when I look at the marketplace now, you look at, you know, the city centres are not what they were. As you mentioned, the suburbs have grown. You know, good coffee is no longer good enough. You know, you need more than good coffee. Lots of people have good coffee now. So what have you got that's different? Like in the early days, we certainly had good coffee when others maybe didn't. So the bar keeps rising and you're going to rise with it.
What was your decision then to sell? You sold in 2018. What was the decision behind that?
Well, I was challenged on a personal health front a couple of years before that. I got cancer in 2015. And I decided then, when I recovered from that I was going to change things in my life. And one of the things I decided then was that I was going to sell my business and do just different things and do new things. And that's what I did. And so it wasn't because I didn't love the business I sold it. I also had been there quite a number of years and I was doing lots of other things in parallel with the business. I just thought it was time to go and time to do new things. And as I say, I don't regret one second of it.
How do you sell a business?
The first thing you do is you run a good business. That's how you sell a business. Now, after that, there's all sorts of things. But if it isn't a good business, why would anybody want to buy it? So that was always my primary focus. If the business is good, someone will come along someday and buy it. And that's like, if you get involved in a business to sell it, you're straight away, you're in the wrong place because you're focusing on all the wrong things. You're focusing on trying to be places and trying to engineer things that are not what you're in the best interest of your business.
So me and you were talking earlier at the image pitch competition and talking about, like, you know, people are coming in to apply. What are the key things when you say there, don't set out to sell the business? What are the key things you look for in an early stage founder? Because now you've kind of had such a broad level of experience. You've done Dragon's Den. What are the key things that you see, the couple of key traits you see in a founder, you're like, yes, this is a backable founder?
So a fella or a lady who understands what they have, as in has a simple, clear proposition. So that you need to know, you as the founder need to understand exactly what your business is. You need to be able to articulate that. But what I'd be looking for is someone who, that I can see, has the hunger and has the drive to keep going. when, you know, when things are going to get tough, when things are going to get really, really difficult, can this person, he or her, can this person go that extra mile? Will this person work harder than the next guy? Will this person sacrifice all stuff on their personal front to make sure that the business is a success? They're the kind of things I'm looking for.
How do you find that?
Well, I'd like to think that I have a reasonably good sense of people, personalities, and a good sort of gut instinct around whether people are who they say they are.
Is that pattern matching? Are you seeing things from experience? Because you've done the competition with Image now, I think, for a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you see someone up on stage, how quickly are you able to tell?
I'm able to tell pretty quickly.
How quickly?
Well, I in Dragon's Den, I had to do it within 45 minutes. So if somebody is there in front of me for 45 minutes and I'm going to give them 20 grand of my own money that I've earned, that I've paid tax on, and I'm about to hand it over to them, you get pretty sharp about seeing who the bullshitters are and maybe who the people that you'd like to give 20 grand to.
Version of skin in the game, isn't it?
Well,
if you've skin in the game, you're going to sharpen up.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the insider secrets there. So it is your money in Dragon's Den.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They're all Bobby's 20s and 50s sitting on the table.
Yeah, they were.
What was Dragon's Den like?
It was good. It was a different time. I'll tell you what it was. You talk about, you know, Insomnia getting known as a national brand. Dragon's Den was the catalyst to do that. In that, here was the guy from Insomnia on the telly every Sunday night. And straight away, people started to think, oh, that's an interesting business. And believe it or not, it's hard to monetize or say how much that was worth. But I'd wager it was worth a significant sum. So it was very powerful that way. And again, I was long enough around to know that this was of huge value to me, to my business, to my family. I enjoyed it. I went in with a few quid that I didn't borrow any money to go on it. Any money I had, not that I went in to lose money, but I wasn't going to be paupered by a bad investment, which again gave me a kind of, I think, an objectivity around. Did I make money on it? No. Did I enjoy it? Yes. Did I make a lot of friends along the way? Did I work with some great people? Absolutely yes. So no regrets.
You can see the themes emerging in this conversation. Like, you can see there's many ways to get an objective, because with Insomnia, you had the different routes to market. With Dragon's Den, it wasn't just about the investments. You were building a personal brand when personal branding really wasn't talked about. I remember Dragon's Den. We'd sit down and watch it. This was like, you know, it was back when TV was kind of...
We had 800,000 viewers every Sunday night.
Phenomenal. Like, yeah. When you think of it now... In reality, now it's probably TikTok or Instagram. That's where the captive market is. But back then, it was TV. It was everyone would sit down to watch this program. And then it was talked about on the Monday, the Tuesday, the Wednesday. So, like, it's very rare. So it's interesting to see you have a very strategic mind in terms of, you can see there's more than one way to skin a cat here.
I don't know. I don't consider myself particularly strategic, but I have a good sense of what works and what doesn't work.
When you sold the business, what did it feel like?
Right. It was all those years of hard work, of late nights, of sacrifices that I'd made, particularly to my family. And it was kind of really, I felt great that I had maybe added a bit of value to something with a lot of other people. It wasn't just me, but I had been central to adding value, creating something, and leaving a little bit of a legacy that's still powering away to this day.
Do you remember the day it went through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about it.
We stayed up all night signing documents, as you do, as the lawyers like you to do, even though it was a deal within ourselves. And then I stayed up all night, went for a shower in the RAC where I parked my car, and jumped on a plane on a coffee trip to, where was it, Costa Rica. So I literally did the deal and went on the plane, and off we went. And I was out on a Origin tour with a guy called David McKernan, another entrepreneur who was in the coffee business.
Next week, that's irony. So
that's what we did. That was the next day.
What did it feel like on the plane?
It felt great.
Yeah?
Yeah, it felt good.
I love that, because I talk to a lot of founders, and it makes me so sad when I talk to them. And I'm like, what did it feel like when you sold? And they're like, nothing. I'm like, oh my God, your whole life's work.
Yeah, no, it felt good. I'm not going to say otherwise.
I love to hear that.
But it felt like a chapter concluded, work done. A sense of pride that we'd done a good job. But as I say, there were lots more people than me, and I'm indebted hugely to all the people that I worked with over the years. People that I consider my friends, people who, turned up day in, day out, sometimes when it wasn't easy. But I'm immensely grateful for all those people that I worked with along the way.
What did you do next?
I was, this is what I say, it wasn't like the lights went out when I was in Insomnia one day and I wasn't doing anything the next. I'd sort of transitioned myself out of the business to a degree, not out. I was the chairman of the company. I'd originally been the CEO for 8 or 9 years. And so I was the chairman of the company. So I wasn't at every dogfight every day in the way I used to have been. So, and I was doing other things. I was doing broadcasting. I was involved in a few other businesses. So I still had plenty to do. And I've never done nothing. I still do something every day. So even though I'm considered retired, I still work nearly every day.
That's the goal, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the dream. Good. Like, what is it? Do work that doesn't feel like work to you.
Well, I don't want to sound anywhere arrogant by saying this, but when I sold the business, I decided that I was only going to work with people that I like on projects that I like. And I've stayed true to that. And so far, so good.
I don't think that's arrogant at all. I think that's how people should live.
Yeah.
I said this earlier. I was saying, like, you got to decide what game you're playing.
Yeah.
And then decide the rules.
Yeah. Well,
if you don't, someone else will for you.
Yeah. But that's, as I say, I'm fortunate enough that I've got to a place that I can be maybe selective. I wasn't always in that place.
Well, you worked to get here, though.
Yeah.
No one just handed you a check for nothing. You worked to get here, and you earn your freedom. What's your most exciting project right now?
Bread 41, I'd say. Yeah, fantastic business. I've been working with the guys there, again, just strategically, for the last 3 years, and it's a business that's going absolutely gangbusters. It's going places. It's going to be a great business. It's already a great business.
What is the secret sauce there?
Quality. Quality of bread, quality of patisserie, delivery of product. It's just a wonderful, wonderful business that's, everything about it is quality. And that's what I love about it.
It's incredible when you see the queues outside it, Pier Street, you see the queues.
And
even out in Greystones now, you just see people buzzing around there all the time. It's phenomenal. And there's a magic to certain businesses, isn't there? What do you put that down to quality, or do you put that down to timing? What is it?
Well, it's primarily down to the quality, but it's also, it's a market that's grown, like the bakery market. And again, I was involved in it. Bewley's had a bakery, which I ran for a couple of years. Old craft bakeries, they were all shut down. And what happened in this country in the bakery industry was pretty much a disgrace, in that all these wonderful mid-sized bakeries all closed down because everybody wanted to buy the parabake stuff from, which was, to me, was never the same.
What was that? What does that mean?
So what it means is that good businesses, craft bakeries, where there was craft, where there was apprentices, where there were people learning the trade, disappeared. And we decided to go for a product, in my view, that was never at the same races from a quality point of view. So what's happening now is it's a revert back to high-end patisserie, real bread, real ingredients.
Isn't it matter that happens,
With four basic ingredients, nothing else.
But it's mad how circles go around. What's old is new again. Yeah. Like, there's cycles of change. You've talked about it here already. The Bewleys of cycle one, then cycle two was you. And now we're in cycle three where there's incredible coffee everywhere. Like, it's funny how these cycles just repeat themselves, just with a slight twist, a variation. When you decide to get into a business, what was the key thing around Bread 41 or beside any other? You're involved in so many things. What are the key things? Because I'm sure you get asked to do stuff all the time. What are the key things to, you talked about there, good people, good projects, but what are the key things that make you go, yes, I'm going to commit some of my time to this?
So, as I said earlier, the people and the product. And look at Bread 41, the two lads that are in there, wonderful guys, both very different. And look at the product. I said, this is easy peasy stuff. I'm so thrilled to be asked to come into this business and look at it and help them. And just, you know, be a sort of a guy. I'm not at every dog fight. I'm not running any shops. I'm very much involved strategically. And I hope that my experience and what I've done can add a bit of value. And so far, so good.
What other areas excite you right now? Because you get to see so many businesses, either through your investing or your boards, or even like the image pitch competition. You see so many businesses. What other areas excite you?
I've always liked products around tourism, because I'm a hugely proud Irishman around what we have to offer the tourist in this country. And I did a 7-year term as chair of the Cliffs of Moher, which is the second most visited attraction in this wonderful island. It's a product, a tourism product, and just something that I just think is internationally right up there. And I was wonderfully proud to be associated with that for 7 years, trying to, again, drive it on strategically. Where do we go next? How do we manage, you know, all the operational difficulties of, you know, how do you respect the farmers, the people who live there, the people who maybe don't want to see busloads of people coming into their patch every day? How do you work in tandem with them and make life good for everybody? So I'm excited about that. I'm always excited about food and beverage. Hospitality is very challenging at the moment, so I'd actually be slow to invest in it because it's got too many headwinds against it in terms of energy costs, food costs. They're relentless, and I really think it's really challenging to make a viable business in that sector at the moment, and I there's nothing more frustrating, and I've been there, of working 100 hours a week and breaking even or worse at the end of the week. It's like, at least if you're making money, you say, right, well, that was worth the start. If you're not making money, it's staying with it is tricky.
So what happens, Bobby? What happens to all the coffee shops, the hospitality, because we need them? What happens?
Well, I think what we're seeing at the moment is a changing of the guard. You're seeing, you know, in my day, it would have been absolute heresy not to open a business 7 days a week. As in, that's what you did. If you're a pub, you're a restaurant. What do you mean you're closing on a Monday when there's nobody there? But now, you know, circumstance dictates. And, you know, if a business isn't sustainable, businesses will change to reflect that. So when you can't get a restaurant booking on a Monday night, don't be surprised. That's the model we've society has created.
Mm.
So, you know, and, you know, it's all very well saying, oh yeah, we, you know, pay people the living wage, but if that makes the steak 60 euros, is that really what you want to set out to do? So, I don't know.
Yeah, it feels weird because, like, there's only so much you're ever going to pay for a coffee, right? You're not going to buy 15 euro coffee. So it kind of seems where, how do we reset?
I remember when we went to 2 euro for a coffee, that was the big step.
Wow, really?
Will they pay 2 euro?
And really?
Can we survive? Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe we're wrong. Maybe me and you be sitting here in 5 years going, geez, remember 5 euro coffees? A friend of mine texted me the other day. He was disgusted. He goes, can't believe I paid 5 euro for a coffee. And I was like, that's Dublin City. That's what we're going to do. Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. Right, we're going to do our quick fire round. Looking forward to this one. What book has had the most impact on you in your life?
This is a great book that I read many years ago. Basically, it's called Endurance, Shackleton's Incredible Voyage by Alfred Lansing. An amazing book that charts the navigation in an open boat, and I'm a sailor, so this is a space that I'm interested in. Navigation by Ernest Shackleton from Elephant Island to South Georgian Island, 800 miles in open sea in an open boat, and how he went and did that. And then when they got there, they landed on the wrong side of the island. They had to actually climb across mountains after doing this journey. And they got back to Elephant Island with supplies and nobody died. It's the most interesting piece. You just say, how could they actually do this? And it's stayed with me to this day.
I love that. That's not a business book as well. I like that.
I've just finished a book called The Spider Covenant by a guy called Brian Klein. Interesting. It's sort of a trilogy. And it's about basically what happened to the Nazis after the war. And this basically group that was set up, it's fiction, but it's you could see how it was sort of intertwined with some facts and about what happened to all the Third Reich guys when they fled Germany after the Second World War. Very, very good book by a guy called Brian Klein. Just finished it there recently.
Brilliant. So you've given us a fiction and a non-fiction.
Yeah.
What's your superpower?
I personally think that I'm pretty streetwise in terms of I've got a good sense of just what works, what doesn't work. I also think I can make complex things simple. That is I can do ABC stuff and I never want more than a page in terms of a brief. So I'm a guy who I can do detail, but I like to break things down into simplicity. And I believe simplicity is very difficult to achieve, but it's also very powerful.
It's a sign of genius, apparently.
Well, I'm not saying I'm a genius, but I like to keep things simple.
I always think whenever anyone is able to explain something to me really simply, it means they know that topic inside out. It's people that don't fully know what they're talking will go into like all the buzzwords and a lot of hand waving. And I'm like, oh, you're just kind of spoofing me now. What daily habit is the secret to your success?
Getting up early. And if I'm really busy, I'll get up earlier. So
what time?
I don't need to get up early anymore, but I get up at 6:30 every day now. In the old days, I used to get up at 5. But if I have a really busy day, I'll get up an hour or half an hour earlier. So what I said, when people tell me they don't have time, I say, just get up an hour earlier. And you know, even if that's 4 o'clock in the morning, it can be done.
The simple advice is the best. Yeah. Like, I get up at 5 every day and people are like, oh, how do you do that? I'm like, go to bed earlier.
Yeah.
I just do simple maths. I take 8 away from 5 and go back to bed at 9.
I'm in bed before 10 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10 will be late for me.
Yeah.
What entrepreneur should everyone be following in 2025?
There's a girl called Anyeya Birla. And again, I don't know this lady, but she's basically an AI-driven cosmetic business in India. It's called Love Etc. is the brand. Very, very interesting. And I think it's going to be huge.
Okay. Yeah. You heard it here first. Bobby's called it out. On that theme, I'm going to give you 1 million euro to invest in one person or one company. Who?
Yeah, I'll put it in Bread 41. Yeah. And we'll get into a scaling situation that we can take on the world. Yeah.
There you go. Keeping it close to home. Yeah. I like it. If you were starting again from zero in 2025, what would you do?
You mean in what type of...
What business would you do?
I'd probably do what I know, because I've never really lost money in the areas that I know. Food, beverage, hospitality, hotels, retail. So I'd do something in that area. I think there's a huge opportunity in bread, in bakery, and in baked goods still.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you believe that other people will find strange or strongly disagree with you on?
I think people might think, I think it's all about the person. So people would say, you know, if you look at Dragon's Den, you look at, you know, your analysis of business, it's about the business, about what is this business? What can it do? Where can it go? I'm less interested in that, and I'm interested in the person who's behind that. So I can take or leave the business.
Back to jockey, not the horse.
Yeah, 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 that's what I do.
Okay, what's been your best investment?
Anything that, as I said earlier, the stuff I know, so I would suggest that my investment of, and it was small money at the time, in Perk, later Insomnia, and I kept reinvesting that and that I made. That has been a good investment. I was successful. I sold the family business in 2007. I've been in our business, in our family for nearly 50 years. And that was very successfully offloaded. So again, it was a hotel, businesses that I know, they've been successful investments. I've lost money on...
Oh, we're going to get to that. Don't worry. What's been your worst investment?
So I've lost all my money in Surf Seeds, Boiler Bleed, Uncle Aidan's Flour, the Bin Trasher, all great products, but Bobby didn't make a penny on them. So there you go. It was just the type of... And some of those products I'd still be really excited about, but did I make any money on them? No.
So I think the theme here is invest in yourself and stick to your knitting to what you know.
I think it might be.
What's been the best bit of advice you've heard in the last 12 months?
Whatever the business is, don't stay too long on it.
Give me an example. What do you mean?
Well, I've seen people who have become so, I suppose, intensely involved in their business at the expense of all sorts of other things, family, life generally. And, you know, they build up great value in a business and they don't really spread the risk. And then all of a sudden the circumstances change and they find themselves in a place where they really shouldn't have been, because they could have even took some off along the way and they didn't. So I just think, you know, don't stay too long. And, you know, there's also, you know, you've only got a certain amount of energy. And I think you need to realize if there's somebody more energetic coming up behind you, maybe it's time to let them, you know, fulfill that energy.
Never be the last one to leave a party. It's not that famous rock and roll advice. So me and you are going to be judging on the image pitch competition. What are you looking for from people who are applying? I'm going to put a link in the bio below to apply.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'm looking for people, you know, who maybe just want to bring their business to the next level. So people who might have a business, it's a business that's going, but they're just not sure where to bring it next. This is a great opportunity, you know, to maybe get clarity around your own vision, but to get involved in something that's going to help scale your business. It's going to help bring recognition to it. It's going to give you mentorship that you probably need. It's going to bring you to alongside other businesses that are probably similar to you and that you're going to learn off. So for all those reasons, it's a competition that's well worth entering.
And you might meet Bobby Kerr.
You might,
most important of all. Bobby, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming in.
You're most welcome, Gary. Thank you.